Ladies and gentlemen, buckle up for the sex. It's the Apropos of Nothing podcast.
With your hosts, Salsa,
Matt,
and Jenna.
And we have a twofer this week. Ooh. We have, no, fuck that. What's the drink, Salsa?
Oh, you're not even going to introduce them?
Nope.
Wow. I
mean, you guys can talk.
No, snub.
You can call him an asshole.
So the drink we're drinking tonight, it's kind of a variation on the that we had a couple
sounds
months
delicious.
Ago.
It's, she's going to do nicely here.
Yeah. It's similar to the in that I have no idea what's in it. So tonight we are drinking.
So it's just like high school.
Yeah, tonight we're drinking a.
Yes.
As opposed
to the.
You can really taste the umlaut.
Yes. No, we are throwing together some stuff that I have laying around the house. So tonight we have. Tropical Punch Juice Box.
Ooh.
And?
Along with some. Creme de banana, because we need to use it up, and some Galliano, and some gin, because Jenna hates gin, and that makes me happy.
Hate you.
So this is sort of a...
Everything a growing diabetic.
Fair enough. All right, on that note, I'll actually let our guests introduce themselves. So we have a returning guest to the podcast.
Hi, I'm Duck Washington. I am a return. I think this is my third time here.
I think so.
I don't know why I keep coming back.
You might be a three-peat, yeah. And we have first-time guest.
That's right. I'm Jenny Cherrier, and I'm producing To Kill a Minnesotan at Fringe this year.
Sweet. Wow. See how she worked that plug-in? Super smooth.
I know. Just
so
this is good.
Smooth.
This is good.
Just lubed it right up and shoved it in.
I've been doing this for months. It's good.
So let's all, on that note, take a sip of our drink and decide how much we hate salsa.
Oh, a lot.
Oh, it's passable.
That's fine.
Really?
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Throw some San Pellegrino in there.
Yeah, I think, colder would be better.
But
the fact that it's relatively room temperature is a little bit off-putting.
Yeah,
but
what
I
bothers me is that I can taste little bits of everything.
Yeah.
But the one that's hitting me the most is the gin. It's like the gin just rides
on top of it.
Gin is overpowering.
And I'm like,
coming out to me.
What's Galliano?
It's a herbal.
Oh.
Herbal
you know, it might be a mix between the and the gin.
Nothing on this is
like
in English.
The both of them might be just like,
This is not helping me at all.
So, yeah. I feel like there's things in there that I should
bottles,
like.
Though. You have to use it.
Those are fun
it
bottles.
It doesn't even matter if you drink it, you just have to have it.
That's
have
true.
It.
Yeah, and then you put like a dried rose in it to pine over as you write at your old 18th century writing
there
desk.
There is English on here. According
is it a government
to the Surgeon
warning?
General,
yeah,
women should not drink alcoholic beverages.
You are a piece of shit. Don't worry, we do the show with you.
So watch out, Matt.
Yeah, well. I've taken my Plan B. I'm good.
So,
I mean, it was years ago, but I assume it's still working.
maybe we'll put some bitters in here, Jenna.
No.
Ooh,
I hate
there you.
You
go. Ooh. Do you have the orange ones? What's that?
I don't know.
Literally
Jesus
the worst.
Christ, Salsa. Well,
I'm just throwing things together.
While Salsa's ruining his life and ours, what's everyone up to?
Oh my God, what have I been up to? The Fringe.
I was going
to
say the short answer for almost everybody's
more
fringe.
Yeah. Followed by some Fringe stuff, and then on top of that I did, Fringe.
There's a lot of fringing.
I got a text from my mom today that said, hey, are you all right? I'm surprised that you didn't call your dad on his birthday yesterday.
But that raises a couple questions because we've talked about this before. We've talked about this before on the show is that I do not know my parents' birthdays, nor how old they are, any of that information. And my family has just come to terms with this. And so within a couple days of the three family members, I have my sister, my dad, and my mom, the two who are not celebrating a birthday will call me or text me to say, don't forget to call or text dad on Friday. And then, a few months later, don't forget to call or text mom. And so they just know. They've given up.
I used to have to do that for my brother.
Yeah.
He finally plugged it into his phone.
So does your family assume... Are you normally good at this?
I am normally good at this.
Okay.
I'm normally okay. There may have been...
So they trust in you to get this shit right.
But, it wasn't even on my radar. Like, I know my dad's birthday. Like, mm-hmm. But, she sent the text, and I realized, I was like, is it August? Is it already August?
That is spoken like a Fringe performer.
To be fair, you did talk about how amazing your parents were yesterday.
I did. I do it right in my Fringe show. I talk about how.
See, I feel like that's the way to go. That gets you excused out of a lot of shitty Christmas presents and birthdays.
I was busy talking about how awesome you are in my show, so
I keep thinking I got to write one of those like one man shows with like maybe just Chad Dutton providing like sincere piano in the background about like being adopted and shit, and then like my moms will come and my dad will be there all stoic but weepy. And they'll be like, we did it, he's not a total piece of shit. And I'm like, wait to see how much I'm gonna charge you to come see the show.
My parents haven't seen it and aren't going to see the show.
They're not
gonna
see the show?
Yeah.
Are they not local or do they hate you?
No, they're not local.
Can't okay. be both. And, poor Canelos those.
And a family reunion got scheduled over Friends of the Week, like it does every year, it seems like. So I don't.
The entire it's like a 10-day festival.
And yeah,
I know.
But it's
okay. How far?
It's a really long family reunion.
I'm from Michigan, so my parents live in Michigan.
Okay, I was gonna say if it's a Dakota, you're
13-hour
yeah.
Drive.
Okay, all right. I'm coming around to their way of thinking. And then I wouldn't drive 13 hours to see
the
show.
Huge family reunion, and you know, usually, typically in Traverse City, Michigan, every year.
How big is your family?
Well, my immediate family is pretty small. I just have one brother and then my parents. But it's like all of the descendants of my great-grandmother
mm-hmm.
on my mom's side that go. So there's usually like 30 people there.
That's a fair size gathering.
A lot of people travel from around the country. I dismiss it whenever they schedule it on top of the Fringe Festival.
Like you do.
Yeah. And I'm not in charge of scheduling, so I don't, you know. My mom and my aunt are in charge of, they get to schedule it every, I think it's every third year or every fourth year.
Oh, but this wasn't the one that they could campaign for.
So usually I end up going every third or fourth year because then they schedule it at a time.
That's probably about as many as you want to go to, though, right?
All my family's awesome.
I mean, but even awesome, it's just like, how much do you have to talk about if you go every year? It's like Thanksgiving gets tedious to me. Like, are you still working at Target? Was it? Like,
but we do good. We go crazy. Like, even my wife talks about, like, your family reunions are, like, insane because we do, like, campfires.
Is there lawn darts, the most dangerous game?
We play like Minute to Win It and shit.
Oh, really?
Like,
so you, your family.
What's like, Minute to Win It?
We've done that at Ville shows you've been in.
What's Minute to Win It? I have no idea what's going on.
Please clarify.
Okay.
It was like a game. I don't know if it's still on, but there was a game show in the 70s.
Yeah. No. Like, not that long ago, even. It might have been a remake, but yeah.
It was a remake because.
But yeah, silly, stupid party games. Like, wear this plunger on your head, and your partner has to try to toss rings on it.
Yeah.
You have 60 seconds to get 12.
Oh!
And we did silly.
Make the audience do.
Yeah, where they have to, like, blow a ping pong ball with a condom, shit like that. Yeah.
I get it.
So. Little silly shit like that, and that's.
Although we don't do things with condoms at my family reunion.
that you know of.
There's so many of you.
or so few
of them, maybe.
Oh my god.
I like this. This is going well. Yeah, that's fair. All right, fine. That sounds. Yeah.
So there's been
interesting.
I've had some rehearsals for the Renaissance Festival. I've got the drumming stuff and some fight stuff. So,
any knifey stabby that went untowardly?
No, it all went towardly.
Any drummy booty that went untowardly? Drummy booty is my new thing for belly
dancing. Also, all went towardly.
Towardly?
Towardly.
I like it.
Wasn't
good.
Untowardly, so it was towardly.
That's good. That's good. You didn't. Yeah. You ducked out of doing the Mall of America wisely.
Yeah, well, I actually really wanted to do that, but I had a dance rehearsal for Fringe scheduled at 2:30, or like from 2 to 5.
Yeah,
and Sigourney was up at 2:30.
Yeah, well,
you totally could have brought your sword to that.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a second. Yeah, because young Eric, curse the French, and
hey,
oops, sorry.
right here.
It's a running gag. I swear, it's not about you yet.
It's not about you.
but consequences.
No, it's, he's talking about you.
Yeah, well, fuck. All right. It's like odds and new rewrite. You're not in the show. Young Eric and Molly Glover had their tech. During the beginning of the Mall of America preview party for the Renaissance Festival. So they got there like half an hour before we had to like perform as Wise Fools. Which gave me the joke I got to do on Facebook today because Young Eric was like, oh, we did our tech. I'm like, how'd your tech go? Good. We were the first people to tech at Southern. So they have like a whole thing of different color tapes you can use to spike your set. And they're like, what color do you want? And I was like, white. It's a black painted stage. Why would I want white? It's most visible. And everybody's like, do you want like hot pink or orange or some cool color? He goes, no, the point is to have it visible. I want the most visible color. And I was like, I know what color his tape is. So when we got there tonight to do our tech, I took a photo of Jenny's husband peeling the white tape up.
Yes. Saying,
don't worry, Eric. We're making your show better. Yeah, I didn't get his face in the picture, he has plausible deniability. It could be anyone. It's clearly not me because there's no tattoos. Right. But
also, yeah, but we're posting that admission on the internet anywhere.
Not at all. It has not been on Facebook for hours already.
This is weird. Yeah.
It is very odd, right?
I just get so attached to them.
They become like, it's like when someone that wears glasses for years suddenly gets contacts or LASIK
or shaves their mustache.
And it's just like, whoa. Yeah. And so I think, I get that. Like, it's people have not seen me without multiple easily visible tattoos since I was 18. So, it's a little weird. It freaks me out a little bit. I don't normally think of what I look like, but I notice the absence of the tattoos.
His past mistakes are much less visible now.
I think I have finally decided I'm going to do the tattoo modification on the neck to make Greta into regrettable.
Yes.
Because that works on so many levels. And we were talking about it at the preview party, and I think it was Beefcake was like, you kind of got to do it in a different font too, right? That's pretty funny. And someone's like, Comic Sans. I'm like, I can't do Comic Sans because I'm going to get a tattoo on my wrist that says Helvetica in Comic Sans because I want to piss off every graphic designer I'll ever meet in my life.
You are such a fucking asshole.
And I am not above
getting a... Same man as the Destroyer just...
I know, right? Like, my shins are in for trouble. But I just was like, I can't... I'm not above getting a tattoo for a joke. And like that's a really fun joke.
You still haven't got the tram stamp.
No. I know people have that. That says Finger Mustache Guy. But, so... speaking of the Mall America preview party, Salsa, how'd that go?
Pretty good. Short. Pretty good.
Really goddamn short. You were done before you were scheduled to begin.
Yep.
You piece of shit. Because we got to fill for you. Well, which was fine. We were
Started me before I was supposed to start. So there.
Yes. Okay. Fair.
So the Mall of America, Anita, person in charge of all of us,
cat herder number one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Out of the Renaissance Festival. She goes, so do you want to do the Mall of America preview? And I was like, okay. She was like, okay, but I'm going to have to check on the sword and make sure that it's, up to Mall of America's weapons policy and everything. And she gets back to me and she's like, yeah, they said no on the sword. You can't bring the sword in. It's against their policy, so no problem. I'm like, cool. I'll do other things. Not a problem. I'll modify my set. And then we get there, day of, and all of the belly dancers show up with their swords.
Big-ass scimitars that they're dancing with on their
heads. And the king shows up with a big-ass sword to knight people. And Anita, I walk out there, and Anita walks right up to me, and she goes, I didn't even think to ask about anybody else.
Which, again...
And they just brought their stuff.
What have we learned
from
years of doing stuff is never ask permission.
I wasn't the one saying you should probably ask permission.
You weren't. Yeah.
So she was like, yeah, next year.
Year, just fucking. Yeah.
Well, thank you for reminding me that we didn't put our three guns up in the tech booth.
Oh.
Like we were supposed to tonight.
That's right.
And that's going to be great on Friday.
Fine.
Yeah, they won't notice.
What could happen? No problem. No.
They're not listening anyway.
No one's listening to this. This is just an exercise.
We had a dramatic thing happen at one of the shows. I'm So Bright the Night that we have.
Oh yeah,
tech for that just yesterday.
What theater is that one at?
That is at the New Strike Theater. So I
fucking cool! I can't wait to see that space. Right? How does that look?
It's good. And you can tell that it's a brand new space.
Sure.
You can tell there's going to be a little bit of finesse and polish that's going to go into it. But
is that the place on Hennepin?
It's on Central, right?
Central.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure.
It's on Central and 18th.
Okay.
But it's cool. It's 100 seats.
That's bigger than I expected, actually.
Yeah, is that over by the old Nimbus?
It's right across the street from the old Nimbus.
The building that has, like, Michael Bierhauer's gallery?
It's the same building that has the Diamonds Coffee Shop.
Yeah. Okay.
It's
on the other side. Oh, shit. I didn't know that.
Nimbus is not there anymore?
Nimbus is getting a new space now.
Yeah.
The space that was Nimbus is now...
Something.
Minsky's?
I think so.
Which I looked at, because I was like, I don't see anybody producing there. And I looked at their website, and they charge... like $4,000 a day.
Holy
shit. For rental of that.
Yeah, you're not going to make... They're not going to be around very long.
That's where we had a Fringe show last year, so that's interesting.
Yeah. I actually liked that space.
It's
kind of a cool space.
It's a weird little space.
Wouldn't know it was there.
It's got a surprisingly large stage for the amount of seating there is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can get in, what, 80 people?
Is it even that many? I felt like it felt smaller. But yeah, no, it's a weird, cool little space. I only know it even exists because we did the Renaissance Festival Academy there
five years ago
or something like that. And I sat in on one because Gary Parker was doing the thing. And I was like, well, if I can go learn from Gary Parker, I'm just going to
do it. Well,
so yeah. But it was just like, I've never heard of this. This is delightful. And it was kind of fun. But
60 used to run a bunch of shows out of there.
It'd be a good spot for them.
Yeah.
That was the year before they had the mermaids because...
I had gone to that academy,
but I had fucked up my leg, like so I couldn't actually go out and, you know, run around and stuff like that. So I went and sat in the lobby, and Carr sat with the twins, and they were talking about the twins the whole time.
That's right, no, because I remember they were fitting, God, what's her name? Megan something, that was only there for like a year or two.
Morgan,
yes, yeah, who was fucking cool as hell. Like, she was great, but yeah, like, I remember her like coming in and learning and
she
fitting.
Didn't stick around.
Yeah, she was really rad.
But yeah, that was when that whole business started.
Gotcha. Interesting.
And a lot of inside stuff.
Means
going
nothing
on.
To anyone. Local jokes get you local work.
But yeah, but no. So we had our tech yesterday, and
for that one.
Marcus Anthony Downs, who's my writer slash producer slash co-director for this play.
And potential assassin.
And potential assassin. Had contacted
three names.
Fringe office because he wanted to use, like, guns. And, like, said, like, yeah, I've got it cleared to use these, like, guns that have, like blank charges.
Oh, like a whole other level.
And we got there.
Like pyro, basically.
Like, he bought these, like, super expensive, like, stage guns. Mm. And they were like... No.
Not in a million years.
No.
Not at all. No. He was like, but I called, and this is the most expensive element of the show. So we quickly just threw in a couple of sound effects
into
the audio list, but that wasn't what we had intended to do at all.
So
I was kind of surprised that he had initially apparently got it cleared. But
so he's got guns, and he's got three names. He's a serial killer.
Oh, shit, you're right.
Yeah.
Neat.
Who's that guy? Wasn't there something in the news about a guy who was like reading about the manual on how to use his semi-automatic assault rifle before he just did a shooting?
Whoa!
This just happened. Like, I think I read in the paper today.
Really?
Huh. Yeah, he didn't know how to use it, so he was sitting and like reading
and just googling it
before he actually. Yeah, before he actually was using it.
That's an amazing level of dumbing down.
So, yeah, it's getting better and better.
Good, is it? I mean, sure. I mean, realistically, yes, the world's getting better, but.
Well, you're in it, Matt, so of course it's better. Right?
Look, I
met him before.
Yeah. And I say that with all due respect and adoration since you insulted my French heritage. So.
I did. Yeah. And I made fun of your name for your kid the other day.
Yeah,
which
and you insulted
I'm not doing very well this week.
Yeah. Wow.
Like, seems perfect right course for you.
Right. To be fair, it's the same name as my son, but I was like, yeah, you know, it's kind of a hick name. And she's like, that's my
hick
kid's
name,
too. And she's like,
it's a rich kid's name.
Oh. Austin?
Yes.
Austin.
Absolutely.
That to me is like shit kickers, like rodeo.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
And I think that's all it is this connotations. Like, because to me, like a Braden is like a rich kid's name.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the kind of halfway to a real name, but fake is like the ones that'd be like, ugh, I get
Hunter.
Douche chills from
Hunter.
That. Which was his middle name, which is what made it so douchey.
Hunter,
like that's
no.
Ugh.
Hunter is a rich guy's name.
Yeah. Oof. Bah. Mm. But that's neither here nor there.
So anyway.
So Salsa, you got 5 minutes to impress people without your main sword swallowing act.
Basically.
No sword.
So yeah. I for those of you who haven't figured it out yet, I'm a sword swallower, and I'm going to be swallowing swords out at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival this year. So you should probably go see that.
Mm-hmm. We should point out your street now.
Yep.
Like, because if he ain't street,
he's like legit.
He's on the street. I don't know these.
That's a whole different thing.
But having seen the preview, he's fucking street. That's a that is a legit fucking act. I was like,
to watch that.
No, I was because it's like, okay, here comes Salsa. And they introduced you as Salsa, did they not?
I thought they said Salsa
because we all were like, did they say Salsa?
I may have.
I think they might have.
At the moment, I have no fucking idea. They could have said my name was Tinkletoes.
My guess is all you heard was,
pretty much.
How does one get into the sword swallowing arts?
Very careful.
practice? Answer the question. That's a good question.
No,
we should talk about that.
Okay, so I have been a fire eater and breather for... God, almost 15 years now.
Me.
You asked.
I didn't.
Okay. She is technically correct, which we all know is the best kind of correct.
Yes, absolutely. Can't really fault her for that one.
So many other things.
But about 3 years ago, I came up with an idea for a really, really, really stupid trick that was to swallow a flaming sword. And I was like, well, if I'm going to do that, I need to learn how to sword swallow.
Did someone disabuse you of that terrible idea?
I didn't tell anyone. I just started.
But I know. But I mean, did someone ever say, like, no, idiot, and you moved on to other things?
I didn't
or is that
anyone.
Still on the docket?
I didn't tell anyone.
So did you have a mentor, or do you Google this, or how do you start?
Be very careful of liabilities. I don't normally worry about this shit, but I'm a little worried about
this. Can you learn how to run it like an automatic?
Like learning how to use your automatic weapon.
Yeah.
The thing is after about a year and a half, some douche who happens to be the president of the Swords Hauling International Association, so I really can't call him a douche too much.
Why is this running?
Salsa Joined Blue Man Group.
But this guy shows up on America's Got Talent and swallows a fucking flaming sword, and I was so angry that he had got there before I did. But anyway, at this point I was already pot committed, so I did a lot of research online, and I basically found all of the information I possibly could, put it all together, and then tried to find where they all agreed. Like, you find a lot of bad
information. That's how a lot of carny tricks work, is you kind of go with
but it
the
is.
Consensus.
That's basically what I did, is there's a lot of bad information out there.
Because even for, like, the fire breathing you've done, people have different methods.
Well,
and
people
some
have
are
different methods, and I've also seen videos online that will kill you.
Yeah,
you
no, the thing, but there are some that are technically work,
yeah,
but are potentially deadly.
So I basically found, like, a consensus that these sites all say it do this, and so I'm going to go with a quorum. So very slowly started out. Eventually, about 6 months ago, I did manage to meet a sword swallower from New York who did confirm that I was doing everything correct so far and gave me some really good pointers and stuff like that.
Make sure there's no burrs on the swords.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which is why Jenna and I have gotten odd texts for the last few months where it's just like, Salsa's like, check this out, progress. And then you watch it and it's a gif of him just swallowing a hanger.
Right?
And you're like,
yeah,
it's the grossest thing you've ever seen. And he's all like, eh? And we're like, no,
like,
that's really gross.
It's like a 5-year-old's drawing of an elephant.
No, absolutely.
Like, oh,
no,
good
and,
job,
and even
honey.
While I was set, even while I was sending those, I was just like, I know I'm being ridiculous, but
no, but you have to show
no.
somebody.
And yeah, I mean, so. I mean, not to say,
and I couldn't show
cool,
my wife because she
like
told me not to.
Your wife is way smart,
right?
So, yeah, it's been a long time coming, and eventually, rarely, my wife realized that this was not something I was going to be giving up on. It wasn't a flash-in-the-pan idea or something like that. So she finally was like, okay, look, if you're going to do this anyway, let's at least establish some ground rules. So we have had a long discussion about what I can and cannot swallow. And if I cross any
it's the
of
second time
you know
that
that's
starting
to
I was about
exactly.
to say
no, absolutely.
Is Dick
yeah.
anywhere on that
thank
list?
You thank you thank you
actually no
all of you
really?
Dick is fine actually
oh
it's smooth no burst
well.
Yeah exactly
yeah, right?
Every kind of marriage right?
But you know just numbers I'm not allowed to do numbers I'm not allowed to do you know any like the
corkscrew
serpentine
shit.
Sword or the yeah. corkscrew or anything like that. I can't do anything, any of those things. Basically, just swallowing swords. I swallow arrows and a pool cue.
Pool cue to me is the really fun one.
A bunch of other stuff like that.
I love
and
that.
And those are all fine.
Yeah.
I finally debuted the axe on stage at the Mall of America, but because they wouldn't let me have a sword, I was basically relegated to like arrows and a pool cue.
Which, to be fair, though, like you don't see a dude shove 3 feet of pool cue down his gullet every day, so that's pretty damn effective. And I was, again, knowing that this was your thing and you were going to debut it,
right.
I know what it's like to try a new thing like that, like mm-hmm. we all do. And so I was like, fuck, and I ran around and went to like the
and
back.
I had basically thrown together a rough
oh,
draft
for
of the
sure.
script like last week.
But like I ran around to the back of the audience to watch because I wanted like the people's view of that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, holy shit. Like, and it was
right?
just instantly, I was like, I am really grossed out by this. I kind of don't want to watch the rest of this. He's doing very well. He looks way more comfortable than I'm sure he feels. This actually has some polish on it already, and I don't want to watch anymore. It was kind of
like the porn industry.
You know? I think the only difference there is the type of wood.
I haven't gotten quite there yet, but what I want to do with the Feast of Fantasy is just down a banana.
Oh. Todd Michael can probably help you with that.
Oh, yeah.
That was his front gate gig. He'd get the chocolate-covered banana and just... Yeah. And then just... Megan Culverhouse also.
Not back out. Just... in.
Oh, okay. No, Megan Culverhouse then has got your back, because she would do that as a way to fuck with the pickle boys. She'd walk up, buy a pickle, and then just whole thing down her craw, and smile, and walk away, and they'd be like, and then she'd get like 20 feet away and go, like an ostrich, and just, and have a whole pickle, and she'd go about eating it. But she figured out...
for the hot dog eating contest.
That's
in New
that's
Jersey.
Interesting.
I mean, you could be better than
the next Kobayashi.
Salsa, you're the trying to lose weight. Remember?
Oh yeah, no, Jenna's right. I'm trying to lose weight.
By the way, I heard you recently caved in the field of technology.
Oh, do you have like a Facebook again? Wait, no, that was the last one we did. Twitter,
it
no.
Similar. Some kind of like Pokemon.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No, okay. No, so this is the thing. There's a lot of people shitting on Pokemon right now. I was shitting on Pokemon. I also realized
you're a fat ass.
Yes. I started playing Ingress a little bit ago, and a
it's
lot
not
of people.
Fun.
A lot of hold on. Let me fucking finish.
Jackass. I don't usually.
But I also realized that, such as Facebook, it took a $300 donation, fuck you, CDS, to even get me on Facebook. And I was like, am I just being a curmudgeon for the sake of being a curmudgeon here? Or you know...
Yes.
So I was just like...
You can be a bit of a Luddite, you know?
Right, exactly. So what I decided I was going to do is I was going to download the game, and I was going to give it a couple weeks. And I was going to give it the college try. I was going to see if I actually hated the game, or if I just thought I was going to hate the game because of what it was.
Surprisingly mature of you.
I know, right?
So, I mean, I'm so far...
You're mid-try?
So far, not really tickling anything, but at the same time... Like... But I also don't know anything about the game. I've never played any Pokemon game ever, and I feel like they assume you already have a bunch of Pokemon knowledge.
It does assume that. The game is not...
Yeah.
The tutorials on it aren't.
Yeah, I've got nothing.
Well, I mean, the tutorial on Ingress was pretty crappy as well.
Ingress was really
the developer wasn't very good at that. But
I think it's built on a similar platform to that.
Well, it's identical.
It's built on Ingress.
It is just a skin on Ingress.
But because I don't have any of that knowledge of any of the characters, you know, people are running around like, I got an Eevee! And I'm like, is that good?
Yeah.
I mean, touching any Pokemon. Cool.
Well, and I just doing research online, it's like they evolve into these other things, and I'm like, wait, so now what? I seriously know nothing about it, and I am trying, and I am trying to give it a legitimate chance, and that way, if 2 weeks from now I say fuck it, I just can't deal with this anymore. I know.
It's like when I watched like a couple seasons of Doctor Who, so when I said I didn't like it, people couldn't be like, but you gotta
but you just
watch.
Haven't seen it. You know, it was like, no, I have, and no.
That's not my thing.
So
for me, when the game came out, like, my Facebook feed was filled with two things. It was shootings,
yeah.
Pokemon Go. And I had like, you know, maybe 12, 15, like, online conversations with people about race and the police, and I was like, I need something else to focus on.
A distraction,
on.
Yeah.
And I was like, the only other thing here is Pokemon Go. Let me see what that's about, so maybe I can talk about Pokemon.
Yeah, might as well get, like, hip-deep in that one and splash around a little, just
you know,
for your sanity.
Also, you know, like, I used to teach in a touring educational thing, and one of the things that I used to do as a teaching tactic, because that was at the time when Pokemon, the cartoon show, was really big, is I'd actually watch the cartoon, and then I'd reference the cartoon in class, and that would, like, get all the boys' attention.
You pull the dangerous minds.
I was like,
kids.
I'm losing their attention. I'd say, Bulbasaur, and everybody would be like, what? What is going on?
Is that like
what is he talking
free
about?
Beer trick out at festival?
Yes.
Free beer?
No, my wife is a high school teacher, and she reads all of the teen...
All the young adult literature.
The young adult literature. Just that way she... knows what the hell they're talking about, and when she throws a reference in,
I can now go back and play the game and be like, I know what a Squirtle is. I know what a Geodude is.
I have so
is.
Much See, trouble with that like, sentence.
That sounds like an STD to me.
It does.
But
Like, Doc, all I can manage is a squirrel before bed. I gotta...
Oh, whoa.
But I am enjoying playing Ingress, and because this is built on Ingress, I'm just like, I'll find out.
I feel like
maybe,
I'm gonna...
Maybe this is another Facebook.
If a year from now it's, like, more mechanically robust, mm-hmm. and people are like, no, it's actually fun now, maybe I'd give it a shot. I can't... Honestly, I just don't care or have time. I have tons of games I haven't played yet because I just... would rather be
well
doing
and
things.
It's okay not to play.
Oh, for sure, yeah,
just
you
don't
know.
Be a crab ass about it.
And here's the thing, I do that for comedy because that's just fun. Sure. I'll pick on Shiver Comedy, but and this is a thing that you can argue either side of this, but I did like that someone did point out this, is that for every nerd that's ever like, oh, is there a sports ball on tonight, derp 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 derp, all Facebook is talking about is the super sports ball night. And everybody's like, fuck you, we're enjoying our thing. If you don't like it, just don't watch. And it's like, well, except I can't avoid it. I'm bombarded with it. And now you can't avoid Pokemon Go. You are bombarded with it. So it is the same thing. If you're annoyed by the fact that there is 15 minutes of sports coverage in the nightly news, then that's fine. You can be annoyed by that. But you can also be annoyed that there's nothing but Pokemon Go shit on Facebook or whatever.
I would love to have Pokemon Go coverage for, like, on the news.
I know, if you watch, like, ESPN 8, the Ocho, you can get that. But
I would,
like,
love to have coverage of all of the video game tournaments.
Yeah, ESPN 2 does that now.
Oh, really?
Dota tournaments are only on ESPN 2. They are right near the top of that heap. Like, Street Fighter tournaments
that.
And shit? Yeah, it's fucking weird.
My wife was pointing out to me yesterday how awesome it would have been if Parks and Recreation was still on the air.
God, I love that
and
show.
They could do an episode about, like, the Pokemon Go search.
Can you imagine, like, Andy and Tom wandering the city together would be amazing. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then, oh, God. Damn it. To the fanfic.
I am playing Pokemon Go for science.
Okay, that's a decent justification.
Whatever.
Any other hot scoops, pressing issues we had to cover before we take a break? Anybody else? Any shitting out a kid or anything soon? We're good?
No, but congratulations to my friend who did shit out a kid, even though they're not listening to this. Yesterday.
And you've not even mentioned their names.
No.
Cool. Yeah. Hey, if you shit out a kid recently, good on you.
Yeah, well done. Congratulations.
We're good from you.
Well,
I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know. Babies work. I adopted. Anyway, we'll be back in just a second.
If you guys like what you heard, come visit us on aonpodcast.com and leave a comment. Or you can send us an individual email at salsa, Matt, or Jenna@aonpodcast.com or collectively at feedback@aonpodcast.com.
I'm still Matt.
I'm Salsa.
I'm Jenna.
I'm Duck.
And I'm Jenny.
Hey, yay! We did it. All right.
God, they're pros.
So it's time to talk Fringe, because if you listen to last week and even the week before, you know that that's going to be a lot of what you hear about for the next couple weeks, because that's pretty much literally all we have time for. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying it's all-consuming. There is a point, and I think, honestly, Duck, maybe the first time we had you on, one of the questions I asked you is, how do you have time to do all the shows you do? Because you're always in something.
Yeah.
And you were like, well, you just kind of do it. And I was like, that's not an answer, you piece of shit. And now I feel like I'm as busy as I perceived you to be. And the answer is, no, you just do it. And the real answer is, and you never sleep. That's the part everybody leaves off, because that would scare everybody away from ever being an actor. So thank you, fuck you.
I may sleep way less than a normal person does, but I still find a few hours here.
No, I know. That's the thing. I find, like, my coworkers are always like, oh, man, I didn't get to bed till like 11, and I'm like, you had to work at 10. What? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, well, I went to bed at 2:30. I get up at 5:30 for work. What are you talking about? And they're like, what? No. I'm like, yeah. Like,
I don't even.
If I get less than 9 hours, I'm worthless. I'm like, I think you're worthless anyway. Like, what are you talking about? Like, what the fuck? So yeah, no. It's,
I can't
it's been
remember the last time I was in bed before 1 o'clock.
No, that's just not a thing. To be fair, I did that like a week or two ago. We had a moment where Megan and I were trying to get shit done. We had to finish reading a story for Horror Story Hot Dog. We were trying to finish a movie for Horror Show Hot Dog. I was reading scripts because we hadn't done Mystery in Mystery Lodge, the redo, yet. Still in the middle of our Fringe show, To Kill a Minnesotan. And I was like, I have all these things. I should at least run through everything once. I got to read this story, watch this movie, run a script. And then at 7:30, we both were... And I went, you know what? Fuck it. Let's go to bed. And she's like, we're going to wake up in like 3 hours and not sleep all night. I'm like, then fine. We get up at 2 a.m, and then we read scripts and we do lines and not like, you know, read lines and whatever. But, and then it turns out we just slept till like 10, and we're like, oh my God, that's what the humans do. Like, it was amazing. It was really cool. And I was like, oh my God, I remember high school now. This is amazing. So anyway, The Fringe is an all-consuming beast. I've done a couple of shows. Jenna is usually doing all the shows.
I am only doing two shows this year.
Because you are getting...
I'm lazy.
Getting lazy in your old age.
I'm old.
Duck's doing a few shows.
I have four shows this year.
There you go.
And still not mine.
You're just doing the one.
Yeah,
right?
One's enough. I agree.
No, I agree. One
thing.
Is enough.
Yeah, one's enough.
But no, that's
I'm
the thing.
Take
I think
a very long nap after.
What was your max, Jenna? Six or seven?
Seven
shows in 1 year.
Involved with...
How do you do that?
That's what I said.
How can you coordinate that?
I only performed in five of them.
Only
five. So I had... There was one of them that I was like a mentor for our Fringe sponsorship thing. So I was working with a new producer to help him like produce his own show. So it was kind of...
Oh, was that Jakey's?
Yeah, that was Jakey's.
Oh, great. Right on. Yeah. Jakey Emmert, who's hilarious and awesome.
Oh, right. So I was doing a mentorship thing there, and that was, you know, about... once every couple of weeks I would work with him on various things there. I was an assistant for a Six Elements show.
People do human combat, chess, other stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay. So you weren't acting in all of them?
No.
Okay.
So those are the two that I was just production staff for. Then I did Dick and Fart Jokes in the Key of F, because sometimes when your husband asks you to do a sketch show with him, you do a sketch show with him. And that
That's real love.
Yeah.
Anyway,
or so hate.
That,
Kill Whitey.
I had a guest spot on somebody's show just so that they could include themselves or me or like me or them in each other's like spheres due to the ridiculousness of my schedule. I did Stop Talking.
Oh, that's right, that year.
Yeah.
That was funny. I did Stop Talking
that
year.
Great.
I did.
That's a good year.
Did they do Stop Talking more than 1 year?
Yeah, they did it.
Yeah, I think we did it 2 years.
Yeah.
Because one time it was just we got a ping pong ball way, way late.
Yep.
And
then the big thing was I did Memoirs of a Welfare Queen with 2 weeks' notice.
Yep.
In the Rarick Proscenium, which is not built for a one woman show.
Nope.
So
I saw the remount of that at the BLB that was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was you got more at the BLB, but
well, the space is better for that.
But yeah, so that's I think that's seven. I lost count.
You're probably missing one, aren't you?
There.
Okay. It's a lot.
And you actually can do all the performances? I mean, with...
The scheduling is always a part
of it. Well, that's the thing. How did you do that? That's really the question.
I was in a couple of them. I didn't do all of the Stop Talking.
Okay,
kind of a rotating cast.
Yeah, because that's complicated.
The Dick and Fart Jokes in the Key of F and Memoirs of a Welfare Queen were both at the same venue. And that always helps, because then you know you're not going to conflict there.
Right.
And then... Oh, Fringe Orphans. That was the other
one. Oh, Fringe Orphans. Yeah. Right? That was the one where you did the fights in between, right? Or was that a different year?
No, that was the... Was that the fights or the dancing?
I don't remember. One of the two, yeah.
It was one of the two. But yeah, so Fringe Orphans was a TRP, and that just happened to not conflict. Like, I just added more and more things as I was sure that they weren't going to conflict.
Okay.
I guess. And Fringe Orphans is another one where I could have dipped out of one of them if I had needed to, due to the structure that Brian Watson Jones puts on that show. But I didn't have to that year. So, I had two at the Proscenium. Oh, one of them was at the Stop Talking was the hardest one to get to, but that was also the one that was...
Was that where it was at the theater off of Eat Street?
Yeah. I can't remember.
What's the one that used to have Triple Espresso?
Oh.
What's the name of the theater?
The Music Box.
Music Box.
Yeah, that's
yes.
it.
That's, yeah. That was the time. That's when I told people I was getting divorced for the third time. Was during my Stop Talking performance. Because they were like, all right, the theme is marriage. And Don's like, well, I've been divorced. I know more. I'm like, I'm about to get divorced for the third time. And
everybody was
and
like,
Joseph Scrimshaw goes, giving it to Matt to start this one. And we get done. And Bob Alberti and his wife, Teresa, come up and they go, were you serious? Are you getting divorced? I go, yeah. They go, I didn't know that. I'm like, no one did. This is the first time I've said it publicly.
She doesn't even know.
No, it was her idea.
Yeah.
So she knew. I was the one that was surprised. But like, I've often, big life events for me always come out on stage first. That's how I process things. And wow.
When you're on stage, you have no filter whatsoever.
That is also true. So
So I'm amazed at how you're able to transform all of that energy into a controlled character for my show.
That would assume I'm doing anything worthwhile in your show. Which
yeah,
I'm not,
well, you're going to have
I'm
to see it and
of.
Watch right. this yeah. marvel of transformation.
It is, but let's talk about that. We'll get to that. Okay, was last year your first
No, it's my third year.
Third year. Okay. So what have you done at the Fringe so far?
So I did Omen Stone the first year, and I produced and was singing in it. It was a musical. And
did you write that one and direct? Or just...
I didn't, but I edited.
Okay.
And did almost everything but write it.
Okay.
And then that taught me so much about what I wasn't going to do when I produced my own show. So then I woke up with a story of Office at Night last year in my head, or the year before, and I just started writing it down, and that turned into a show in about a day.
We have to talk about that a little bit, because that is obviously the thing that everybody goes, oh, it's Jenny from Office at Night. And I go, okay, and that's a show I never saw.
Yeah.
And people talk about. So,
oh, good.
No, explain that, though. Like, what was the deal there? What was that like?
So, like, I've always been an Edward Hopper fan, and I have a lot of prints in our... You all have seen the...
It's the one that's right behind where we rehearsed,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. We'll write it inside that curtained area. There's an actual print of it that we used in the show. And, you know, I had this dream about those characters coming to life. And
oh, by the way, explain the print, since we're an audio podcast.
Right, right. Well, so there's a beautiful dark-haired woman standing at a filing cabinet, and she's slightly turned out toward the guy sitting at the desk, who's not looking at her, but the tension is palpable between the two of them, that there's something about to happen. And so that led into a... You know, at first I thought it was going to be a drama, but then as I wrote it, it became a comedy, and then I just kept going with it, and it was very heavy, you know, laden with double entendres and innuendos and so forth, and I just couldn't help but write it. So I had to get permission from the Walker, which luckily has the original print.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so I went to the Walker, and they were super nice about it, cool. And they let me have permission to use the image and reproduce it and use it for the show, and... yeah, and then we went from there, and it just took off. I think people really loved the idea of a painting coming to life, because I had all the set pieces brought on in real time. When the audience came in, it was just an empty stage.
Oh,
and
cool.
Then
fun.
I had my two crew people, which was my husband and my eldest son, Austin. Okay. Austin. And they built the set on stage for the audience to see, to create this painting.
Mm-hmm.
And then we created the painting. We had this narrative follow with that. And Tabitha was the woman in the blue dress.
Right.
Who was, like, enchanting, and nobody could take their eyes off of her.
She is compelling as shit.
Yeah.
And it is really distracting.
You should have seen her in the blue dress.
Yeah.
The blue dress. I mean, you see her. She looks just like her. And so I had worked with her before, and I said, oh, that's the perfect person to be in the show. And I was so pleased when she just immediately said, yeah, I want to do this. And grabbed right onto the script, and we talked a lot about it, and then she couldn't wait to do another show. So, yeah, and then we added on. Oh, pneumonia is great, by the way. I love it. 6 months of pneumonia. Oh. So then, you know, we went on to... I created three more paintings,
just there,
actually.
For just half a second, I thought pneumonia was the name of another play.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Hey. And you were like, pneumonia's great.
Yeah. All right, I'll write that next.
It was a bring-your-own venue, but...
Yeah. I'm going to write about that next.
It's Fringe. Yeah. I've heard...
You've probably heard everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Turn Your Head and Cough, the musical, is totally valid.
Well, there is Ball, the musical.
Yeah, there is Ball, this year.
Yeah. Southern. Yes. So, yeah, that's why my voice keeps dropping out, because it just eventually dies on me. So, yeah, and then we created more paintings and froze those in a position of, you know, so in advancing the story. It was really super fun. And the audiences loved it. So that was great, too.
So I've explained this year's show as the one I'm in right now, To Kill a Minnesotan, as it's a... What would you call it? It's a like a dramatization of potential real life events.
Yeah, it's a fictionalized.
Yeah, it's kind of a
account of a missing person.
Yeah,
case.
It's or here's what could have happened type thing. Like
might
you get
have.
Things, you know, because it is based on real events in a small town.
It's based on truth, and there are a lot of facts in the show.
Yeah, and but it's kind of like you think this is the way this could have gone down.
Yeah,
and.
I mean, I knew this story since I was a little child.
Talk about
and
that
I'd
a little bit.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
That is always the part of people go, where? What does
yeah,
it?
How did
like,
you know?
I
and I'm not
going to
say either, because some of those people are still living that are in the family. And, I mean, it was a real event that happened. And I grew up knowing the story. And it was always just kind of that creepy like rural legend that I knew about that wasn't far from home.
So is
I have to write this down. Like I have to make this
like living in Anoka and hearing about how to dredge up bodies.
Yeah,
from, like,
it was just it was
Sunny
a
Dale swamp.
It was a ghost story.
Yeah.
I had to write it, and it took me 20 years to write it because I started writing it as a screenplay, then I wrote into a 2-act play. And then Brandon Holscher said, "Why don't you do French? Let's do that." And I'm like, "Yeah, we could do that." And then he talked me into playing a part that he was too old for. So, but you know, he's like, "Well, the magic of theater, we can do this." And,
to be fair, I mean,
and
yeah,
we do, and
we all
and,
need a little bit of that.
Yeah, and so that's how that all came about. So it's a pretty intriguing story, and I realized too tonight when we did the talk that. There's a lot of information packed in that 50 minutes.
Yeah.
So bears seeing twice. So
there are no wasted lines.
There are no wasted lines. And that really was the thing. Everything was to advance the story.
Yeah.
And there's just so much in there that it's a pretty rich tapestry of like layers of families and what they do to each other and their, you know, who's with who and who's marrying who and who's whatever with who and
I can't remember if I said
how
this.
That results in some tragic consequences.
Yeah, I can't remember if I said this on the show before, but the thing I was talking about on the Fringe show with a friend of mine, it might have been Carr, I don't know, but I was trying to explain kind of the vibe of it, and the what's his name, Bruce Dern, that the was it Nebraska?
Oh,
was
right,
that the
Nebraska.
Name?
Sure.
Yeah, it's that.
It is that kind
but,
of.
But not a comedy.
No,
it is
that, but haunted.
But like Fargo,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, it's Fargo, it's Lone Star,
or yeah,
all of that stuff.
And so it's just like, oh, it's
dark Coen-ness.
It is exactly where my dad grew up, in a tiny town on a farm where his parents literally ordered the house from Sears and Roebuck and built it themselves.
Yeah, they had that Victorians even,
you know, and like all that shit. And it's like, and then one day someone just kind of goes missing. And the whole town, because of the era, just sort of agrees to just not really think about it too hard.
Yeah. They were scared of the family.
Yeah, you know, and it's just like,
so
well,
they just let it go. They let it lie.
You know, and so it is, to me, it's like, this is just that same feeling I got from watching Nebraska of like, I know all these people.
Yeah,
I
that's exactly it. And that was really
during
what I was
show,
trying
like,
to.
I know all
it's
these gonna people.
It's going to be
these
familiar.
Are my
people are
going to
know somebody
from there. Yeah, like when you
somebody
go back,
in
yeah.
the show, you're going to know who that person and, is, or you have been that person
absolutely.
At some point in your life.
But it's, there's like this dark underpinning that fortunately I've never dealt with.
Yeah.
Which is fun.
Yeah.
So, did you directed Office at Night?
I did.
Last year?
I wrote it,
so
I directed it. I did everything I did this year.
But you did not act in Office at Night.
No, I was in it too.
Well, you were in that one too?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. So this is something, because I want to talk to Duck about this a little bit too. So writing, directing, acting, all that stuff in one big pile.
Yeah.
Do you regret making that decision every time you do it, or are you okay with it?
No, I'm okay with it because I love it is all consuming, and I feel like I spend... From the time I'm starting to write it until it's actually finished, it seems like a 9-month process. It probably is, because I really take it seriously and I rewrite and rewrite and rewrite and, you know, just tighten and tighten it all the time. I'm just going back to it and working all the angles. So yeah, it takes a long time. It's all consuming. And then when I'm done, I don't do any theater at all in the fall because I'm just so tired.
Oh, really? You just give it up?
Yeah, I just give it up because I can't.
That's super
I
smart.
I just don't want to do any of it.
I get a
for
week
a while.
And do the Renaissance Festival.
I need to just not do anything for a few months. And then of course, then Fringe props up again and I go, oh, well, maybe.
Oh,
I don't know.
Man.
Do I want to do it again?
God, it's like
so
having
much
another
work.
Kid.
It
You're
is.
Like, oh, that was
it is.
A
it is.
Time.
It's like having a baby. It's like, yeah. And I think mostly because it's of all the hats that I wear, I think that's what makes it so you know, exhausting, but so rewarding too. At the end, I was like, at the end, then you go, yeah, I did that, and we got here, and it had this success, and it worked, you know, and that's satisfying because then it's another level of, you know, legitimizing what you're doing and legitimizing the company that I started, you know, and yeah, it makes you feel good when it works out. Yeah. So
just like having a kid, you start to gaslight yourself into thinking it wasn't that bad.
Yes. Oh, so gaslighting.
That is totally true.
I know. You're just like, oh, I don't want to do that.
Unlike having a kid, you do a Fringe production, and then you're done
and
with
you're
it.
Done.
That's true.
Whereas
you don't actually have to raise it.
It is a, yeah,
it's
over
it's
at
an
that point.
That's a 10-day adolescence, which is probably preferable.
Yeah, that's true. And then it's over, and you can go, whew. Okay.
So... that's what we've been devoting almost 2 months
and
to.
And I'm really proud of you for taking this on, because I know I saw you in Hardwired at BLB, and then I said, think you might be right for the sheriff. And then you're like, I've never done anything like that before, you know? But you read the script and you said, yeah. I think you said something like, I dig the script.
That sounds like me.
That really sounds like me.
And then I was like, good, good.
Yeah, no, I felt
you had the right presence that I needed for that character.
I think I've said it before on this show that this is the one who's like, yep, I have no idea what I'm doing. This is probably the biggest mistake of my life. She's probably going to fire me real quick.
No.
Because this is so really far pleased. Outside my comfort zone, but that's exactly why I did
it. No, because I just saw that in you. I knew that you would be right for it. So, and really I am sugarcoating it, but yeah.
Are you making him blush? This is fantastic. Yeah.
No, I really did.
Oh my God, look at that. Like,
no, I'm really
not. Little apple part of the cheek.
You really
there.
Did, you know.
Yeah.
And when you have your scene with
He's
Tabitha,
actually speechless.
You know, it's really nice.
It
looks good.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Megan.
This is a tough
You're
show.
Gonna have to forgive me for this.
Duck.
What's up?
All right, something crass and whatever.
Time
we'll
with this
put that back
talking
in.
About his divorce.
I know, right?
I can do 40 minutes on my divorce. That's cake. Yeah. By the way, come to Fearless Lab next Tuesday.
Oh wait, I want to ask this right now because I think this is fantastic.
Sure.
When do you guys open?
Friday.
This Friday
at
10 p.m.
at the
hey,
Southern
Duck.
Theater.
When does Caucasian Aggressive Pandas and Other Mulatto Tales open?
It opens this Friday at 10 p.m.
Woo! Where are the 10 p.m.ers?
We,
you're at Theater in the Round, right?
Yeah.
So
we're right next to each other at 10 p.m.
As long as I tell you both, I'm
competitors, yes.
You saved $20. So what we're saying is...
Why weren't you at my show? Oh, I was
at the other one.
Yeah,
it's like having two prom dates.
Yeah.
So
that's right.
What we're saying is
we
clearly cannot be at each other's opening nights. So what we'll do is we'll meet at Republic afterwards, which is Fringe Central this year.
Which is right in between us.
It's the best.
I know,
it's between.
Yeah,
it's so beautiful.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, we will meet at Republic afterwards, and we will talk about how amazingly both of our shows are.
Oh, unbelievable. Yeah. I mean,
unbelievably good.
Just the next step to Broadway for sure.
Yeah, we are, soon enough we will be household names. CW, here I come.
I always say you can't throw a stone and not hit an actor in the Twin Cities.
That's true. Soccer outside the theaters beforehand.
We could probably make that happen.
No, don't see that show. Come see this one over here.
I don't know what pest soccer
is. So it's like a sideshow barker. You're like, come and see this show.
Like hawking across the street from each other. Like, no.
Can we hire you to like swallow swords in front of Southern, maybe to draw attention?
I mean, yeah, he's
that's
a dirty carny.
Yes,
if you give him money, he will do things.
How much are you going to pay him?
We're all carnies at heart. That's how we got here.
A good button.
In a good way.
A good actor should be. No,
yeah,
like, that's,
I think
no,
you have to
carny
be.
Is a compliment to
no,
me. Like, if someone's circus,
me,
that's
I have
the best.
No
yeah.
Yeah,
for sure. So, okay, Duck.
Yes, sir.
We've had you on the show before, but of course, you never know if this is someone's first episode of our show or not. So, tell us about Caucasian Aggressive Pandas and Other Mulatto Tales.
Sure. So Caucasian Aggressive Pandas and Other Mulatto Tales, which is a chunk full to get out of your mouth, is a show that I wrote that we produced for Fearless Comedy this past November. It did really well. It's a show basically inspired from my experiences being a multiracial individual. It gets a little zany, gets a little crazy. There are... the titular story is about these panda bears that are made hyper intelligent in a lab. They were hoping to make them horny, but instead they make them very
super
smart.
Racist.
They escape the lab, and then they decide that they want to kill everyone who's a Caucasian because all of the scientists in the lab that they were in were Caucasian.
Mm-hmm.
They come across me, they have this conundrum because they can't figure out whether or not I should be eaten because they can't figure out if I'm black or white. So they put me through a series of tests
to figure
that out. That's like
I was going to say it's one of the highlights of the show, but there's no part of the show that to me is not a highlight.
Right?
Aww.
And gross, bleh, but like honestly, this is like
still
one of my
not
favorite.
Going to his opening. No.
Motherfucker.
Well, he has other commitments. Let's be
excuse.
And again, we had Duck on before we did the show. This is, and I've talked about it afterwards. This is to me, this is the best thing Fearless has ever produced. I love this show wholeheartedly, and I've talked about this at least as much as I've talked about my own show for Fringe, because I think this is, I told people when it was first running, this is not only a good show, it's an important show. This is a show everybody should see, and of course, we'll talk a little bit about the fact that, okay, 6 months later, the world looks different, and I would argue it's even more important.
I mean, I think so. I mean, the show hasn't changed too dramatically. It's really different in the fact that we've changed venues. We have a lot more room to play around at Theater in the Round than we ever did at Bryant Lake Bowl. And it's so fun to play with the...
Oh, my God. As a director, I just fucking sploosh. Like, I'm going to make you legs there, but you're entering from over there.
Run,
Let's
bitches.
Fuck with the audience. It'll be great.
It's really fun to be able to play with the intimacy of that space. The script hasn't changed a whole lot. It's also really nice because we've had more time to finesse and, like,
and it's also
find
all,
new discoveries.
It is
rehearsal.
All the original actors.
It is the complete original cast. We were managed to get we were fortunate enough to manage to get everybody back. Who you know, we have a cadre of just amazing performers in the show, and I couldn't really be happier than to be able to work with the people that Jenna cast for this.
Which again, you know, like if you've listened to our show, you know Ted Famwright, David Elwin, Kirsten Wade,
Matthew
Kesson, Susan Cross. Oh no, sorry, not David. Sorry, I'm just I lump those two together all the time.
Yeah, they become a thing.
Now. Sorry,
so.
But but Ted Famwright, Matt Kesson, like it's a murderer's row of people that are amazingly good at jumping in and doing weird shit. And then like this is the show that I always describe to people. I got whiplash going from super emotional, like teary eyed. To laughing my ass off, to appalled, to laughing my ass off, to teary-eyed again, to like it just and it's it the somehow those transitions work in this show, and so it's to be gross about it. There's the thing of like, oh, another show about race. It's going to be this heavy-handed blur, and it's like.
But I really didn't want it to be.
I don't think a moment of this is heavy-handed.
I specifically tried. You know, I didn't want this to be. I didn't want it to be a preachy show. I wanted it to be a show that brought everybody in. That was just like, hey, this is my experience. I'm going to try to. You know, and I always figured comedy was a really great bridge to get people to a place of understanding or, you know, or openness. And so I thought this was a really great opportunity to get people to interact with a story about race.
I think your fringe preview
in a way that was welcoming to everybody.
I think your fringe preview nailed it because you did the cookie bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that I thought was like, oh shit, like that makes the entire audience go, oh, okay. Like this is an inclusive show. And that write-up you got from I forget where, I think totally got the vibe. Correctly, which was as opposed to yelling at people or, you know, not educating because you're doing that too, but not like lecturing people.
Right.
You are, it's an idea of instead of like standing at a lectern and, you know, a bully pulpit, you're being inclusive and drawing people into a conversation. And I think your fringe preview nailed that because you had this game, but then you also have a little bit of heaviness. But then you bring it back out on a laugh that is just like, ah, fuck, that encapsulates the mood of your show in 3 minutes,
mm-hmm.
which is insanely difficult and really smartly done. So, well played. Jenna gets slight credit.
I just told them where to go.
It pains me to say it. Jenna gets credit.
Yes!
I'm going to say it's mostly Ted. I like that guy. But
actually, it was totally Kesson. It was all
Kesson. So, going into it this second time for either of you guys, you know, Jenna or Doc, do you have different expectations of the audience or the... Because you don't get to do, like, a Q&A afterwards.
It's
The Fringe. Like, it was one of the things I loved about seeing it previously.
It's going to be a really different experience, you know? Not only is the Fringe audience a little bit more random, I'd expect we're going to get a lot of different people because so many of the people I know have seen the show already. So I'm expecting most of the people to come in to be strangers in a lot of regards. I mean, I'm sure I'll still have a lot of like, you know, yeah, Duck's my buddy.
Well, you'll have me dragging people every night that I can.
But it's really cool for me to be able to communicate to an audience that isn't probably my typical audience, you know. And this is the first time that Fearless has actually ever performed in the Fringe as well.
Yeah.
So it's a new audience for them entirely too. And we're in a bigger venue, so we can sit more people. And everybody gets to be closer to the action in that space.
That's
love Theater in the Round is like my favorite place to be.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
To do a show. I've done lots of shows in there, and every time I get the chance to, I couldn't be happier.
I really think Theater in the Round is probably the best venue for this particular production. Like it's just the amount of interacting, but still ability to move around and have your own space within that space is just great.
Yeah, I can't wait. Like, Megan's already like, okay, yes, I know we're going to go see that show about the pandas. I'm like, it's not about pandas. Like, I would go see a show about pandas. Like, pandas are dope.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, there's so much more happening. But, like, and this is, again, something we've talked about last week. I think there are too many good shows this year because we now know too many people. And, therefore, I want to see 15 shows. And that's just not going to happen because I have a day job and I have my own shows and... The Fearless Show.
I'm amazed at how many shows I get to, though. Like, I literally...
I'm gonna do what I can.
Because I always feel bad about, like, budgets and stuff through the rest of the year and what shows can I afford to go. I always tell myself that, like, this is my time. I have an artist pass. I'm going to get to see, I'm going to go see everything that I possibly can.
Yeah.
Which is hard when I have four shows in the Fringe.
Yeah.
You know, like, I was trying to work on schedule the other day. I think it was telling me I had 35 to 40 slots filled.
Oof.
You know, last year I saw like 40 plays in the Fringe, you know,
you're better at Fringe than I am.
And it's
yeah, that's
it's
a commitment.
Crazy,
that's like an everyday thing.
I try to get to almost
that's
every
not a high
single
bar.
Slot that I can get to.
I wish I had a job as much as my job currently is the thing that allows me to do as much theater as I've been doing. I wish it also came with a couple weeks vacation each year because this would be my vacation now. Like, there are people that get to do that where they go, all right, 10 days off, I'm going to just pick a theater and sun up to sundown, see everything. And the next day, new theater, sun up to sundown. And they can see, I think you literally can't see everything, but you can see as much as is humanly possible. And I would love to do that.
And I'm still pretty dumb because I still do go to work every day during the Fringe.
I'm going to as well, you know, like I'm going to be there. Like, that's.
It's like I'll work until right before. It's also nice that I work on campus, so it's really easy for me to be like, all right, at 5 o'clock, I'm going to jump on this nice ride bike and fly over to Rarig Center to catch the 5:30 show.
Oh, Rarig is great for that.
We used your office for a set for conversions this year. That's right. So we can say that, right?
Yeah. They knew what was happening. Okay, cool. They gave me the thumbs up.
All right.
So.
Okay, so you just hinted you're in four shows?
Yeah, so I'm working on four shows. I'm in three shows. So there's.
I mean, you're no Jenna.
About. No, the most I've ever done is five. I've never done seven.
I've done is two. So I'm just going to shut up.
Yeah.
So Kessen's up to like five. Or
Kessen
six
is up
now.
To five, but one of them is just as a voice recording.
I want to point out that Matt Kessen's event, Watch Matt Kessen Slowly Unravel, that is a schedule of all his Fringe shows. It's my favorite way of talking about being in too many Fringe shows. That's so good. I love that.
One a year,
but. Speaking of Kessen, Kessen and I are both in three shows together. So we're all in Pandas.
Yes.
And then Jenna is also with us in Disconnect.
Explain Disconnect, because I don't know much about it except that I love it.
I don't I think we're all in that same boat.
That's based on just knowing the people. But
So Wendy managed to get a slot, Wendy Bowlesby managed to get a slot in the Fringe Festival. She lives in Texas now.
Mm-hmm.
And was like, I still want to kind of produce a show. Let's make a show that's kind of about communication and connection and the things that get in the way of that. And so she started structuring a show with people who were here.
Half a country away.
You know, and she's kind of put up a thing on her Facebook page, like, who wants to be in a Fringe show? Or who wants to help me out? And a bunch of us raised our hands. We're like,
that sounds ridiculous. I'm in.
And she was like, so the theme is communication. What do you want to do? Like, what the fuck do you want to bring to the table? And so we started shooting back and forth ideas. You know, I'd seen that Ariel Pinkerton, or now Ariel Leaf, because she's married now, had thrown her hat into the ring, and I was like, I haven't done a show with Ariel in a really long time. I want to do a show with Ariel. So I sent a message to Ariel. I was like, hey, let's do a piece together. And so we decided we're going to do a word association piece where we're each given a list of words, and we each describe kind of what that word means to us. And then we get to see kind of how those definitions differ, you know, given our different backgrounds and experiences. And that's like a little section of the show. You know, but there's like a section where they're like, we're playing telephone and people are interpreting things with Play-Doh or body movements, and there's all, it's like a hodgepodge of all these different things focusing around communication.
Yeah,
what are you doing?
A lot of different
one?
Little vignette things. I've got two different vignettes that I'm doing. One of them is a dance piece.
Cool.
When Wendy pulled it out, I was like, Wendy's a dance choreographer. Yeah. And she always does amazing dance.
There will be dancing,
stuff.
Yeah.
So, yes, I'm in because I want to do a Wendy Boltzmann dance.
Sure.
So now I get to do a Wendy Boltzmann dance, and I'm very excited.
Like all right-thinking human beings, you want to do a Wendy Boltzmann dance. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm doing that dance with Wendy, Angela Fox, and Cole Starr.
Oh, that's fun. Nice.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good group.
Oh, yeah. So I've got that, and then I'm also doing a spoken word storytelling type thing with Philip Andrew Bennett Lowe.
Oh, which of course we've had Pablo on before, and like he's one of my top three. I will drop everything and be in your show. I don't even ask what it is yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? We've done a show with him before.
It's always the best. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, and it is, Matt, it's very similar style to Get Thee Behind Me, Santa.
Of course,
just
yeah.
The stands, there's a stool.
If anyone has ever had
there's
a strong,
Jameson involved. Yeah.
If like anyone's ever had a strong voice, it's Philip.
Right?
You can tell a Philip piece in eight words. Yep. Mostly because you hear the clinking of ice. Scrimshaw at least had beers that had no ice in them. Philip's always got Jameson.
And here's the thing. I actually wrote the piece.
Oh, nice.
With Philip's voice in mind.
Fun.
So
we get to see how much you can make him your puppet.
Yeah. Oh, it's so much fun. Oh, my God. I have danced for you all these years. Now you will dance for me.
I like this.
Very verbose, slightly erudite.
Yeah, that is exactly how I wrote them.
I like this
idea.
So,
yeah, you should show up and see if you can actually...
that's exciting as hell. I like that a lot.
Bring somebody who's seen a Philip piece and then see if they can tell if it's a Philip
piece. No, Megan and I will get out and see that because she came to Get Thee Behind Me, Santa.
Okay.
So I could take her to that and see if she goes, oh, it's that same guy. And I'll be like, nope. Like, that'd be fun.
Ha ha!
There's really so few times I get to tell her she's wrong.
Well, my guess is that everybody's going to think Philip wrote this piece.
That's exciting. I like that a lot. By the way, you're totally giving that away right now on this.
Well, how many French people actually listen to this?
I mean...
One.
They're not going to have time to listen to this.
That's
Are you
fair.
Kidding?
It's true. I mean, it'll go up in the morning. They got 2 days.
2 weeks and they'll be like, oh, God damn it.
You know.
When it gets posted to my wall, then everybody's going
to That's when shit gets real. God damn it.
So, yeah. So, anyway,
that's exciting
super
as well.
Looking forward to
that. What else are you in, Duck?
So, I'm also in with Matthew Kesson and Philip Andrew Bennett Lowe.
We need to get Matt on here.
It is so ordered, the Supreme Court's Greatest Hits, which is basically derived off of a show that we've been doing throughout the year. You can take the postcard.
I'm taking it because I've not heard of this one even. What the fuck?
So, everybody grab the postcard.
We are.
There's postcards all over.
Oh, my God. You did a London Calling parody on the... Oh, you bastard. All right.
So throughout the course of the year, I've been working with a group called American Civic Forum has been doing a show called The Great and Happy People. And on days Luther King Day and Labor Day, even Pi Day, we've gotten groups of people together and we've read great and historic speeches revolving around specific topics. So, like, on Martin Luther King Day, we read speeches, letters, you know, all that were focused on civil rights, court cases, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's all, like, it's a really great thing that we do that is just to bring in people and have them interact kind of with history, and we have discussions afterwards. But Matthew Foster, who produces this show, managed to get us a slot in the Fringe Festival. And he was like, so what we're going to do is we're going to do basically our same show, but we're going to do it all focused on kind of Supreme Court cases that were really powerful, cases that are, you know, absolutely ridiculous and funny to hear read out loud.
Stuff that's outside of being tied to a month or a date or...
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And so... most of the performers who are performing in the show are performers that regularly appear in the Great and Happy People show. But we're gonna go through and read some fun court cases.
That's super cool.
Every day, every performance, I'm reading a piece by the notorious RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. on some of the days, I get to read a couple of other pieces too that I'm really excited about. But awesome. It's going to be fun. It's really awesome to see the audience engage and just hear some of the things that get read.
Sure.
You know, we recently did a piece just a few weeks ago for Memorial Day, read like some bits of like the Constitution and like people would just like. Enamored, like just, you know, that's something that the Declaration of Independence.
Mm-hmm.
It was for, you know, and like like, this is not something that people, like, hear read out loud.
Well, it's not coffee table book material usually. Right. Yeah, you know, that's something that you know of it, but you don't know it, usually, I think, right? You know.
But there's great people in it. You have, like, Tim Uren is in it, and Catherine Glover is in it. We mentioned Matthew and Philip. Pat Harrigan, you brought
Pat Harrigan, Zill Benson, so Rachel Flynn. I love Pat. Yeah,
Just a great cadre of folk. I think it'll be a good time.
All right, so all right, you son of a bitch.
And
what else you got?
And then the last show I'm working on, I'm not actually performing in. I am co-directing a show called So Bright the Night, which I only get to see twice because the rest of the performances I have overlapping performances for. But it is a it's a noir set against the backdrop of Mexican repatriation in the 1930s, which was a thing that happened, where we tried to put all the Mexicans on a train and send them back to Mexico.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so very topical.
That's some Adam Todd Brown shit.
That some of our potential political leaders are talking about doing.
Right.
And so that like really like I was like, I mean, it's the perfect time to be producing this show, which was actually written a few years ago without knowing anything about Trump and his ideals
with
walls and that sort of thing. But we have a great cast. I'm super excited to see
which theater is that one at?
This is at Strike Theater. Oh, I should mention that It Is So Ordered is at Intermedia Arts.
Oh, okay.
But So Bright the Night is at Strike Theater.
Which is the newest theater.
Which is the newest theater ever in the in town.
I think, right?
That's... It's just, like, literally, I was talking to the techs when we had our tech rehearsal yesterday, and they said that there weren't doors on the day before.
Yeah, the ink on my Kickstarter check is still wet.
Right.
That's how new that theater is.
But I'm super excited for that space. I love...
Fotis.
I love Allison a whole lot. You know, I produce the Encyclopedia show with her, and she's one of the new
amazing
founders of that space.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Fotis and Joe Bozic.
Yeah. Also known as Forum Expedia if you're in the improv community.
Yeah. And then Javier Bardem is also involved.
I didn't know that. Right.
Who has his own fringe show that I'm excited about too.
You're forgetting the name of it right now?
Mother Tongue is the second part of it. I want to say, like, Broken English, Mother Tongue.
I think you're right.
Broken English, Mother Tongue. Yep. Yes. So you guys should see that show, too.
I want to appreciate this beautiful moment of panic that I got to witness in Duck's eyes, because Duck, being a consummate professional, of all the times I've been on stage with Duck, I've never got to see him look like that. He's probably seen me look like that a dozen times. So, like,
only a dozen.
That felt good. The nice thing is you wasted in front of an audience of the internet, whereas I've just eaten shit in front of an audience of actual people.
Right.
So, you know.
Hear that, listeners? You're not actual people.
May I ask just one question?
Sure.
Ask all the questions.
All right. So you have a woman boards a train and hopes to rescue her husband from deportation or worse before they reach the Mexican border. And border spelled B-O-A-R-D-E-R.
There are some issues. I did not create the postcard. you might also notice that
taking all the Mexicans in? Or is it, happening in this show?
I'm going to come live in my
villa. Is that the drama? Is it everybody's got to live in one house? Or I'm sorry. This is the avenue by which we do these things. So I'm so sorry I had to just ask.
So one of the characters' husbands has been detained and has been thrown on a train to go back to Mexico, and she and her sister-in-law board the train, trying to figure out, is there a way for us to get him out of the prison car of the train? Sheriff Traeger, who's this horrifically awesome, horrible racist character that's like, I just need to get these Mexicans off, you know, out of my California or whatever, is also on the train that they have to interact
with.
I thought it was California.
That's kind of the back. I don't want to give a lot of the, you know, what happens on the train. Because the history of what's going on, which is real history.
That's fascinating.
Is kind of a backdrop to a noir story. So there's another story that's being told on top of the issue that's going
on. So I have a question concerning the directing of said play. If it takes place on a train, how did you, as the director, portray the scene on it? Because trains are cramped places, you know.
Yeah, something I've taken up with my co-director on a regular basis, probably almost every rehearsal, is the fact that he should have never written a play that pretty much solely takes place in a single train car.
So your answer is should have done better in the first place.
I have managed to pull some of the play out into the hallway of the adjoining train car, and we have cheated the benches out a little bit so that you can see everybody when they're in there.
Yeah, those are pretty cramped spaces.
They are pretty cramped spaces, and when you put six actors in a, you know, what's basically like a 6x6 cube, it's blocking gets to be a real feat.
I can totally see myself writing that play and having no concept of that until I have actors in the room going, oh no, because that's exactly what happened for Inferno. I had no idea what that was going to look like until I watched people go on stage and go, oh, you're all just kind of standing in a heap. I fucked up huge. Like,
but in our first blocking rehearsals, my head probably did blow up 28 times.
Oh my god, I can't imagine.
But now I watch it and I don't have it doesn't ever blow up. So.
I'm just trying to.
He sleeps comfortably.
I mean, possibly like to pull vignettes out of the scene and into the audience, or do you just do different tricks to make it feel claustrophobic when they're still in a large space, or what do you?
No, it's pretty claustrophobic. It's basically one train car in the hallway that's right outside that train car. Like, it's not even multiple train cars. All the action basically happens in a really tiny room.
And that's the
sometimes characters enter, sometimes they exit. So sometimes you might only have two characters in that room, but there are times where you might have five people in a 6-foot square room.
And there are ways of doing that. The folks that are doing Itch this year, which they're using a different production name. They're Dangerous Productions when they do the Twin Cities Horror Festival, but when they did their show this last year, they set out their big tarp to soak up all the blood that they're going to use.
Yep.
But when you come in, your program has a 3-story blueprint of an apartment building. And it shows you the size of different rooms, where hallways are and where stairwells are. And what you have is different people all standing in the same space. But some of them aren't interacting and can't get to each other. And then you'll see them walk to a prescribed doorway on your map, walk around, and then go doot, 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 doot. And that's them going up a level and then around to another prescribed hallway and through a door and then react to someone who, of course, is at the same plane as they are from the start, but now they're on level 2. And at first you're like, wow, this seems dumb. But then after you watch 4 or 5 minutes... once you watch a little bit of it, you totally know where they're going. And it totally makes sense. And as an actor, that's terrifying to me because you have to remember all the doorknobs, all the hallways, all the stairs, all the whatever. That sounds like a nightmare to me. But you actually, as an audience member, which is all I've ever had to watch it as, you really quickly learn the geography of where they are. And you know, well, they're on the 3rd floor, so when they hear the scream, that's why they don't immediately run 4 steps away to talk to whoever's screaming. They hear it, look around, go out, hallway, 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 stairs, hallway, stairs, room. What the fuck? And by then the person's dead. And you're like, Jesus, that's weird. So I can't imagine writing shit like that. But there's ways of making strange spaces work. You need buy-in from your audience, which is always the case. You know, the suspension of disbelief gets heavier the more weird shit you put on people, but it's doable.
Like, you know, like,
it's interesting, too. And like, it's a fun conceit.
I can give Marcus hell about, you know, this play taking place in a train car, but I'm sure that I will look back at that and be like, oh, that's so easy compared to, this coming June, I'm directing Arcadia for Chameleon Theater Circle by Tom Stoppard, which is a play that literally happens in 2 different time periods in the same room, which is going to be another feat entirely.
I think we're doing something like that.
I was going to say, like,
because we're in 1900, 1905, 1923, and 1928.
I luck out in only having to really be in 2 distinctly different time periods.
Yeah, we have different time periods.
I luck out because I don't have to jump around. But yeah. Because that's weird, and I don't want to think about it.
Yeah, it's a little trippy.
My wife directed a play that it's one room, but it takes place in 2 different time periods, and so characters in old-timey dress will walk out and somebody in modern clothes will walk in.
Yep, that's That's kind of exactly how Arcadia works.
And the time just interesting. Changes.
Ah, theater. God damn it. I should be better at it. Do we have anything else we want to make sure we cover before we take a break?
That covers all of my Fringe shows for this year.
I feel like, and we pimped like every Fringe show ever last
week. Yeah, we did. Like five people have been like, oh, hey, thanks for pimping my show. And I was like,
happy to do it.
Did we? I don't even remember.
Yeah, but I don't want to add another 20 minutes by just doing the same litany. If you are local and you're going to go check out the Minnesota Fringe Festival, one, thank you. And two, check out last week's episode for a list of things that we are either peripherally involved with, helping produce either as a company for Fearless or through one of the people who are sponsoring through Fearless or one of the shows we are all in, or just shows that friends of ours are in. You know, there's a ton of those as well. So if you just want a list of cool shit that you should see that we are also excited to see, check out last week's episode. Hopefully getting some in-depth what nows and the who's it's on these two shows. Well, two shows plus the other five shows Duck's doing. Jesus Christ, Duck.
17!
You know, hopefully you get a little more in-depth on this one because I honestly feel like these are two shows that I'm excited about and proud of for different reasons. I'm enjoying doing something totally different for me. Yeah. And I, like I said, I'm a huge supporter of Duck's Panda show.
I'm really interested
to
see what you do.
Okay.
Someone here thinks that you do a good job, but, you know, I'm judgier, so...
Yeah, but she doesn't know him very well, so...
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah, I'm gonna shut up. So, we'll take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a second.
Hey, everybody. You should like us on Facebook, apropos of nothing. You could follow us on Twitter, at AON Podcast. Or you could join our Steam group at AON Podcast. Search for Apropos of Nothing.
And we're back. I'm still Matt.
I'm Salsa.
I'm Jenna.
I'm Duck.
And I'm Jenny.
Yay, we did it. Hey, it's about that time for all of us who've been... We should be rewarded for
a spam comment of the week.
Nope, fuck that. We don't like our websites being hacked by random assholes. So it's about that time for those that have worked so hard and so long to create this podcast to have some fun and play a game. So I would suggest we play a Fast Five.
Fast Five.
Salsa, you piece of shit. There you go. All right. For those of you that are new listeners or have never played before, the way a Fast Five works is we get five questions from a listener, A or B choices, Coke or Pepsi type things, but with no context. So we were given the choices. We choose the one we think for whatever reason we might have in our heads to pick whichever one. Once we've all made our choices, we go back and then check to see what the context the person who submitted the questions gave us, find if we were right or regretful. So...
usually regretful.
Yeah, usually regretful. What we're doing is still continuing to go through, because I cleaned up my inbox a couple months back and have just been realizing there was a lot of these that we never actually got to. This particular Fast Five comes to us May 16th, 2012.
Holy shit.
And we've not yet hit this
was
one.
Was I even on the podcast?
I hope not. Those are the
I wish
days.
You weren't
those
now.
The, yeah, those are the salad days.
So I'm the meat?
Yep.
I'm the entree?
You can be replaced, Jenna. We can now get Jenny.
I'd take that.
I would absolutely take that trade. So this one comes to us from Saint Mana the Destroyer.
Woo!
By the way, this is so old. Her sign-off is just... Mana the Destroyer. That's how long ago this was. This is before her
pre-sainting?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
So, Fast Five. Question one. Cigarettes or Taco John's burrito?
Cigarettes.
Which is worse for you, and I'm going Taco John's burrito.
I mean, that's a good comedy answer.
which do you crave?
After sex.
Burrito.
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 That doesn't even have to be after
post-coital burrito is the name of my Led Zeppelin.
There's nothing better.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go. I think almost every answer I'm going to go with Taco John's.
Yeah, anything Mexican.
No, okay, but Taco John's or Taco Bell? Do you guys have a strong opinion?
I would go with Taco Bell.
Okay.
And that's not
but that was not the option that was given.
No, no, and that and we've decided, yeah. We decided very early on you don't ever get to say neither or both. You have to pick one and you have to think, because otherwise this whole thing falls to pieces. But just for the sake of conversation, Taco John's is always the inferior one to me, right?
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Although I did really appreciate their like theme song in the 90s that was like, there's a whole lot of Mexican going on.
Oh my god, I forgot about
Taco
that.
Taco John's.
Taco John's.
Although the Taco John's
there's
had
a whole lot of Mexican going on and So Bright the Night at the Minnesota Bridge.
Although
oh, yes.
Taco John's did have the six pack and a pound, which was a pretty good.
That is true. I
good
did.
Deal.
Look, I'm not
six pack and a pound. That sounds like a.
It was a drug deal.
It was a, yeah.
a pound of potato Olays and six yeah.
All right,
tacos.
Sidebar. Potato Olays.
Oh my God! Yes.
See no.
No potato. No, no potato Olays. Overrated or most overrated?
They're flat tater tots.
They're disgusting.
Yeah.
They're amazing, no, and no. You two don't know what's good.
I don't even know what that
can't
is.
Do
it's
it.
A flat tater tot.
It is.
Yeah, it's,
and then you put
it
cheese on it.
Yeah, like picture a tater tot that's only
amazing.
A third as tall as it is if you stand it on end.
Yeah.
And it's got, like, they shake spices on it.
Yeah.
That's I love it.
And,
love it
and
so
for, no, but this thing is like people that are into that. They're
is
like,
it, is it a Minnesotan food? I've never heard.
No,
of
No, it's Taco John's has it.
Taco John's.
Oh, okay. It's just it's
which
a Taco John's
Mexican
side.
Mexican or Minnesotan?
No, it's
probably closer to Minnesotan than
Max.
Pretty close to.
I don't know what it is.
There's a Taco John's like two skyways away from me at work, and I'm like, I might need to.
So take the McDonald's hash browns and stamp out a quarter size circle. And that's a potato Olay.
Yeah, yeah
that's
no,
right.
That's about right.
That's
yeah,
right.
And then shake some bullshit it. On it. Yeah, and it's and but there are people
I
that just
it.
Like they lose their goddamn mind.
It's
my
like
first wife
that
lost her mind. Like that. She would
I'm just
she was
like,
anorexic
oh.
and ate Taco John's potato Olays all the time. And I was like, what the fuck does that? I don't,
you sure
anyway.
She wasn't bulimic?
No. Well, huh. I mean,
but that six pack and a pound was good drunk food.
To be fair.
There
most
no
foods
good
are good.
Food.
No, I was just say all foods are good drug food, which is really saying the same thing
yeah.
because
yeah.
it just doesn't matter. Yeah. All right. Question two. Oh, it's gonna be one of these.
Uh oh.
Cigarettes or Taco John's burrito?
God damn it.
Taco John's burrito.
See, again, really.
This
sometimes
one,
these are interesting. Sometimes they'll fail.
Which would you rather burn to the ground? And I'm going Taco John's burrito.
No, I think we just actually talked about this recently at a rehearsal. I think is that I keep trying to smoke my fake cigarettes. And that's not a thing. So we have stage
there's
cigarettes.
No powder left in him because
no, but the, well, there's no powder
you've been
in him
sucking
because
on him instead of blowing.
Yes, yes. No, and that's the thing. It's like we got to that scene of me and Tabitha. I'm like, I have breath like a fucking butthole from whatever. Because it's just I've been like, I stand around with that in my hand and I'm nervous. And I go,
yeah,
and
yeah.
then I go. And it's just like, if you want to just kind of
yeah.
like,
yeah, blow out.
If you want to like just kind of douche your mouth with baking
yeah.
soda, that's what I've been doing.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get better at it. I've been
you
using the same
so
one for all our rehearsals so that hopefully I'm not blowing them all out before we get to the show. But like,
giggity?
Yeah, I hate you. So yeah. What is it? Burning them down? Fucking
cigarettes.
Fuck you. Fine.
Which one would
God,
you rather
I love
set on
smoking,
fire?
I just don't do it. So. A question three. Cigarettes or Taco John's burrito?
What?
Are they all cigarettes in Taco John's burrito?
I don't know. We got to find out as I get there.
Would you rather have a pack of cigarettes or a pack of
burritos?
Burritos.
Yeah. Burritos. Assuming that's the context, which
yeah,
seems like a long shot.
Obviously, I'm making this shit
burritos.
Up. I know. I'm clairvoyant.
I mean,
I'm the only smoker here, right?
You're the only regular smoker, yeah.
Yeah.
Are they all? Are they all the same?
I can't look ahead. That would violate the rules of
oh
the game.
Oh, my God.
It would. I would say if somebody was to just randomly hand me a pack, I would actually be more delighted by the burritos than the pack of cigarettes.
Yeah, no, picturing
like,
myself, if I'm like...
Which one am I more likely to buy?
Yeah.
Pack of cigarettes, because I do that. Like,
just like my platonic ideal of me
days,
walking down
but...
the street, just like... If someone puts their hand out and they have either a pack of cigarettes or a satchel full of burritos... I'm
taking
burritos.
The burritos, yeah.
Yeah,
of course.
Well,
yeah. You gotta have the
could
Indiana...
be a briefcase.
No, it's gotta be Indiana Jones style.
A valise,
yeah.
A valise of...
Although now I'm thinking that even though I don't
no
smoke
essential.
At all, like, cigarettes have monetary value.
They do.
If you're in prison?
Well, yeah.
No, that's number
I've
four.
I've been to jail. They don't do as much as you'd think.
That, no, that's number four,
you
which
do much
is better
money trading
in
food. At least in... Never mind.
Okay, what's number four?
It's only a weekend. I don't know much about prison economy. Number four, cigarettes or Taco John's.
Which is more valuable in prison? Cigarettes.
Cigarettes.
If we're
going
yeah.
with
that,
yeah.
cigarettes. For
yeah.
Why is
four.
Everybody going with me on this?
I don't know. You're boldly asserting your
because
claim.
Because it's any more likely than anything else. At this point, I'm already overthinking it.
Fair and enough. Question five. Matt or salsa?
Oh.
I'm clearly going.
In the daytime or nighttime?
The answer to this one is clearly Taco John's burritos.
Yes.
And a cigarette after.
No.
I would have known. I would have been so disappointed it wasn't a salsa taco, Jonathan.
Knowing mana, knowing mana, this cannot be complimentary to either of us. Course. So yeah. I'm going with Matt.
Aww.
Oh.
Fuck. Now, see, now what do you have to do?
I'm going with me because I want to know what self-esteem feels like. I'm going to
pick salsa. Yeah, we're hoping you'll develop that as well. So.
I'm going to pick salsa.
Hopefully before opening night, seriously.
Who would you rather burn to the ground? I'm going to go with salsa.
I like that. That sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Do we all weigh in on this?
I'm going to pick Matt.
All right. So,
here did you pick is. Somebody?
Yeah, I did both. I mean... Like I said, what time of the day is it?
You got to pick one.
No, you have to pick one. It's the rules of the game.
You know, and I'm going to have to go with salsa because he's fresh and new to me. So,
so fresh and so clean.
That's not how salsa works.
That's not
All right, question one, cigarettes or Taco John's burrito? I believe I went burrito.
I went cigarettes.
Burrito.
Okay.
Burrito.
Which is the most difficult habit to break?
Cigarettes.
Burrito.
Fucking.
For me.
I'm going to say burrito for sure. I can pick up and put down cigarettes, and I do it every year.
Yeah,
but
and it doesn't feel like
a wave of burrito in front of me.
Yeah, junk food fucks me up.
Nope.
This isn't junk food. This is Taco John's burritos.
That is junk food.
That's the worst.
No, right, but you could have a McDonald's. McRib.
Shut up about the McRib. Dude.
I know, right?
Don't tell me. Don't talk about McRibs unless.
Because
they're fucking sweet ambrosia.
Oh,
I made a McTrouble last year, which is a McRib where you stick a McChicken and a McDouble in the McRib
like
bun.
That. No,
it was amazing. Oh. Yeah, I got. Oh,
I
got thoughts
way.
On this.
You know what real barbecue tastes like, right?
I do love real barbecue. I'm not. I don't go to Taco Bell for real Mexican food. Right, just like I don't go to McDonald's for real barbecue. I go to Taco Bell to eat Taco Bell. I go to McDonald's to eat McRibs. That's a totally different thing. It is exactly a specific itch I'm scratching. It's just like, dude, oh, my leg itches so bad. Don't you feel better? Nope. Because you scratched my arm. That's not how that works. Like you've got a. There's a. Okay. Look. Question two.
I wish I had subtitles to that. God damn.
All right. Question two, cigarettes or Taco John's? I think I went cigarettes
on the cigarettes
second
on the second
Taco John's. I went Taco John's again.
Yeah. Same here.
Oh, this is a really, really good context. Which would you rather taste during drunk makeouts? I fucked up. I do not like the cigarette taste.
No, I can't stand the taste of cigarettes.
Burrito will not. I will not even notice burrito because I will also taste like burrito.
but the taste of stale cigarette.
That bums me out. That's, I'm not saying I'm above it. I'm not saying that's a deal breaker.
I've
but
done
I
it.
Notice it and be.
I've upset. Done it, but the whole time I went, please let this be done.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Like that's when you go down on her, just so you don't have to taste it.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
What? That crossed the line? Are you fucking kidding me?
Oh my god.
That was our line? That was our line?
The line crossed there was, I think Salsa finally made a joke.
I wasn't joking. I was serious, motherfucker.
It's a crossover from oral to oral.
That's true.
That transition was just too, like, too fast.
Sometimes you just gotta, you know, never
mind. Taco.
Taco flavored kisses for my Ben.
And then you're going from the taste of cigarette to the taste of taco.
You know what? No. Question three. Cigarettes or Taco John's burrito? I feel like I went back
tacos,
to burrito.
Yeah, taco.
I was taco.
Yeah, I stayed on burrito. Okay. Yeah,
taco.
Which is easier to roll your own?
Burrito.
I feel like burrito is the right answer.
I kind of say that.
You technically don't really roll your own Taco John's, but like rolling a burrito.
Yeah. Like, rolling a burrito, I always end up putting way too much stuff there, so that by the time I'm...
But that's half
that's
the
key
fun.
Not to do that.
But you get a little cigarette machine, you can roll
well, that's true. You can do... Yeah, if you...
But I don't, that's
hand roll...
That's a bridge too far.
Nah,
because if I'm doing that, I'm just going to buy a goddamn pre-rolled cigarette. What are you doing?
I
had friends in high school that, you know, like they would do this. Then they realized, they were like, no, we could just smoke a pipe.
I do love smoking a pipe. That's I also enjoy smoking a pipe. You get a good Meerschaum pipe, and you're much better off.
Yeah.
Maybe I should take up pipe smoking.
I worked at
pipe smoking is delightful.
I worked at Chipotle, and rolling a burrito really is fucking easy now.
Yeah. No, but I think the thing is like, okay, if I'm going to roll my own burrito, that burrito is going to be exactly what I want.
Yeah.
If I'm going to roll my own cigarette, the best I can hope for is rolling a cigarette as good as my American Spirits I could have bought. Like, what?
Yeah.
What am I doing?
You save money, though. It saves a shit.
But if you're trying to save money, you're just not smoking, period.
Right.
That's true.
Assuming that you're able to quit.
I don't smoke enough for that really to matter.
Yeah.
Because by the time I got through a can, it would be stale and I would have to throw it away.
Question four. Cigarettes or Taco John's burrito? I feel like I was probably Taco John's burrito.
This is the one where we were all cigarettes because we've said this.
Oh, you're right.
The jail one.
Okay, well, this is pretty fun then. Cigarettes or Taco John's? Which is more impressive to have 15 stuffed in your mouth simultaneously? I do love the old school, like, carny guy with, like, 40 cigarettes.
Yeah, but
it's
more impressive to have 15 burritos.
It is more impressive. However, there's the dude that does the bit with the cigarettes. I can't remember his name. He's dead now. Unrelated. but no, one of the world's best magicians who did a bit with lighting a cigarette, you know, and does the thing, and then does a bit, and then pulls another cigarette, lights it, and then brings up the other one, and now has two.
Oh my god.
And he does this till he has a mouthful.
That's
wraps them in Kleenex, swallows it, does something, and then brings them all back out. And I'm like...
And you have a problem with his sword swallowing and his hanger swallowing?
Yes. I think it's the idea of how far down... My gag riff, like, I would make the worst date. I just can't... Like, the spirit is willing, but the epiglottis is weak. Like, I can't. But like that... I'm going to find that video and post it on our fucking Facebook because it is one of the best routines of all time. But like, that to me is... Honestly, that is more impressive than someone... stuffing a bunch of burritos in the mouth, because that to me is just like, okay, wedge. It's like a phone booth packing. Like, okay, sure, you got a lot of people in there, but where's the art?
There's art.
Is it a cigarette thing?
We're getting art here, really?
He reached for that pretty far.
You know, if I may steal a quote, they're putting the F back in art. It's fine. And finally, question five, matter salsa. Which is most likely to be caught bumming cigarettes outside of Taco John's?
Matt.
Yeah, me.
Yeah, I'd have to say
that's me. Cool. All right, good. We all agree I'm a piece of shit. Thanks, everybody. If you would like to be an awful piece of shit human being since Fast Five, you can. You can email matt@a1podcast.com. And the format we use for these now, which has changed since 2012, Jesus, is you send us one email with your questions, your A or B type shit with no context in it. Send a follow-up email with, you know, questions A, questions B, something like that, so we know which the two are. And the second one has the context, that way none of us know them ahead of time, we can all play along. Thank you for everyone that sent those in. As you can tell, we're working through some really old ones. I hope we'll start getting some new ones come in. We're still adjusting some of our website stuff because of the hacker hiatus. At any rate, thank you for bearing with us with that. Good to be back. Thank you to all the folks that in person have said, hey, it's really good to have you guys back. Because I've had a surprising number of people go, dude, it's really cool that you guys have a podcast again.
Yay.
So that's really nice. So thank you for that. Thank you, Salsa and Jenna, for getting through that with me and our listeners, because it's been nice.
I almost
killed
them.
It was close. It was touch and go here in Denver.
There was a sword, but then Salsa ate it.
Tell you what. You know what would have made that better? If we were better caffeinated. I feel like that probably would have put us in better moods.
Yeah, no.
And if you're going to get caffeinated, there's only one way to do that. And I think we all know. There's only one true method to caffeination.
Injecting it straight into your veins?
You're not helping.
Well, I mean, as long as it's True Stone.
True Stone, you say?
Yes.
What are this?
True Stone Coffee, proud sponsor of the Apropos of Nothing podcast. If you would be interested in some True Stone Coffee, make sure to go to their website and use the coupon code... Apropos.
Is it spelled the same as apropos?
It is, in fact.
Excellent.
There. And you can get, I believe it's 10% off of your coffee delivery. Things that are really important about True Stone, they roast it fresh.
Yeah.
They roast it fresh. And,
every bag has a date
quick.
On it.
Yep. You will know exactly when your coffee was created.
I was going to say, like, dried fruit.
Yes.
They put dried fruit on it?
Yes. And a woman with it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and yes, as far as you know. I don't think the FCC regulates podcasts.
Like yeah, pretty
No, I will say the only thing I can claim for certain is that, like, when I get an Apropos of Nothing bag of True Stone Coffee, it fucking says Apropos of Nothing on it, which I think
is fucking
adorable. It makes me feel like a big goddamn deal.
That's
makes me feel special. I've got all of our bags that have been sent to us.
Yep.
I kept them all.
Oh.
But we have had folks from True Stone on the show here in the A1 Labs. They, as we mentioned many times, made coffee for Fearless Party Room at Conversions for all the con attendees that needed it in the morning. They are doing as much or more than any other local business we've ever worked with to help support local podcasters, people doing local theater, and just, you know, being part of the community. And that's something that is amazing. I would love to see them have that effort rewarded.
My parents have been in town for the past 5 days, and every morning we had True Stone coffee, because that's what I have here at home. And then on Sunday, we went to a diner.
First taste is free.
We went to a diner on Sunday, and my parents were just like, this coffee is... I like the coffee you guys have at
home.
There
you go. So, and they can get it delivered to their door, with a discount even, with that promo code.
Apropos.
Or apropos, if you prefer. Just saying. But, yeah, seriously, thank you, True Stone Coffee. Thank you, listeners who have been ordering True Stone Coffee from them. Please continue taking photos of the coffee you're getting with our discount code.
Oh, my God, that's fantastic.
Posting on Facebook. We fucking that is the best. Like, it's... that is, I love that shit. So, yeah, get your cold press, get your beans, whatever you might need. They are truly wonderful people. We've had a blast. One of these days, we're going to get ourselves out to their location, and we're going to do a tour, and if we're lucky, maybe even record from there. It's on the to-do list. So thank you for that. Thank you to them. Once again, TrueStoneCoffee.com, apropos as your discount code. That said, if you are local and so inclined financially and interestingly, wisely, fuck me, it's late, come see shows. In fact, come see mine, To Kill a Minnesotan, which opens this Friday, 10 p.m. at the Southern Theater, which you can find at facebook.com/ what's the event page? Probably just To Kill a Minnesotan. Perfect.
Plus, it's on Fox Hill Studios.
Excellent. You can do that. You can check out the press we've gotten so far, which is a lot, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we'll be up and running as of Friday, which is 2 days from now when you hear this. And once you've seen that show on opening night, you could go see the second night.
I don't know, man. You should come to the first night of Caucasian Aggressive.
So here's what I got to say about that. All right, the open night of Kill the Minnesota, you'll have a good time. But if you go to the second show, it's probably the same show. If you come to the first show of Caucasian Aggressive Pandas and Other Mulatto Tales, you get a button on opening night only.
Boom.
First 100 people get a button.
Resorting to bribery.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well played.
Oh yeah, we are.
Very well played.
No. Marketing can't compete with a button.
You can, actually. I own a button maker.
Get on it, will you?
Send me a design. We could have buttons.
Yeah, I can do that.
But yes,
you just started an arms race here.
Yeah, holy shit. So, Duck, plug your shows.
All right. So, Caucasian Aggressive Pandas and Other Mulatto Tales, we already talked about, opens this Friday. It's going to be freaking awesome. It's the most personal piece of theater I've ever put together.
Great shit.
I really hope you'll be there. It is so ordered. The Supreme Court's Greatest Hits, I believe, opens on Thursday. Yes, Thursday at 8:30. That is at Intermedia Arts. So Bright the Night opens on Saturday at Strike Theater. That is at 4 p.m. And then Disconnect also opens on Saturday, but I don't remember what time it opens.
8:30.
Perfect. I'll believe Jenna.
And that's at which theater?
Yeah.
That is at the Barker Center for Dance.
Perfect.
Just really close to the Rarick Center.
Yep.
On the university campus.
Awesome. So once again, thanks for tuning in, everybody. Thanks for putting up with our hacker hiatus. And hey, if you do manage to get out to any one of these fringe shows or see us attending any other fringe show, like I said, we mentioned a bajillion last week. We're going to be doing our best to be at as many of those as possible. And if nothing else, swing by Republic next to the Southern Theater across the street from Town Hall Brewery, which is Fringe Central this year, because we'll all be hanging out there each night, congratulating ourselves and each other on a long night's work. So come say hi, honestly. Like, it's always great to meet you folks. Everyone I've ever met that listens to this podcast has been really cool. So.
Also, Fringe courtesy, you go see a show, you write a review.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, good.
Yes,
thank you.
Please.
Good reminder.
God.
It is. We love having butts in seats, and the best thing you can do with that butt after it gets up from that seat, take 2 minutes, go on your phone, give it a rating and a review. I know that every podcast talks about that for their podcast or whatever. That's long term. That's great. You have time to go, yeah, I'll get to it eventually. With the Fringe, it's 10 days.
The faster those reviews get in, the more that's going to
so important.
Yeah.
Yep, it is very, very important. So whether you see my show or Duck's show or any show, if you see a show that you like –
Whatever yes. show that is.
Let's yeah. say, like, as yep. a caveat.
Yep. Now, if you, no. but if you see a
if
show.
You don't like our show?
No,
go
just
ahead.
Don't say anything.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, but if you, but no, if you whatever like, show
keep
you.
Your mouth yeah. shut.
No, I yeah. want those reviews.
I don't want them.
I want those reviews.
Just be quiet.
But I would say part of going to a festival like the Fringe Festival, especially now where it's so cheap to see so many shows, I would say it is incumbent upon you as the audience where if you see a show, give them the courtesy of 2 minutes of your time, give them a review, give them a rating. That is how folks like us get a chance to do more shows like this in better venues during the rest of the year. Like a good, well-reviewed Fringe show can turn into a month-long stint at some other theater during the year, and that's a big deal. So thank you for that in advance. And on that note, I think we can get out of here. So thanks for listening, everybody. Eat the fucking cake.
Ladies and gentlemen, my beer and I would like to remind you to support the incomparable Brandon Muffuckin' Patton, whom you can find at BrandonPatton.com. He's been kind enough to donate all the music you've heard so far tonight. You may also find him on tour with MC Frontalot, whom you can find at Frontalot.com. Lastly, if you'd like to support the show directly, please leave us a review or rating on iTunes, and you can even donate money through PayPal on our website, AONPodcast.com.
Is
this
too
loud
for
the
podcast?